Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
That's right. This is the Between the Ropes podcast. I'm Brian Fritz. Thanks for listening in to the podcast. A lot going on in the wrestling business now that we're on the road to WrestleMania. And with that comes the announcement of the latest WWE Hall of Fame class and the announcement coming down earlier this week that the Fabulous Freebirds are finally going in to the WWE Hall of Fame. We've been waiting for this announcement for a long time. Thought that this was going to be the perfect opportunity, considering that WrestleMania is taking place in Dallas, Texas. That is Freebird land right there. I think anywhere in the South is probably Freebird land, but especially in Dallas, Texas, of course, World Class Championship Wrestling, the feud with the Von Erichs, that is perfect Freebird territory right there. And it's great that it's finally happening, that the Freebirds are going in, but in Dallas, it seems like such a great fit. And that's why I was really happy to catch up with Jimmy Garvin, who was a member of the Freebirds. Of course, we all know about Michael P.S. Hayes, Buddy Roberts, and Terry Gordy. That's what you immediately think of when you think of the Freebirds. But of course, Jimmy Garvin was a part of the Freebirds as well, especially during the early days. And remember, Jimmy was working in World Class when he was a Freebird, but even when he wasn't, he was Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin, but he was right there for when the Freebirds, the Von Erichs, are going at it hot and heavy in World Class Championship Wrestling. Quick reminder before we get to the conversation with Jimmy to rate and review the podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher, wherever you get the podcast. Those are the two best places, probably. iTunes, Stitcher, you can subscribe. As soon as the podcast comes out, boom, you get it right there. If you rate and review the podcast, that helps out tremendously. Of course, you can go to BetweenTheRopes.com as well. You can find the audio also on SoundCloud. Just go to SoundCloud.com/BetweenTheRopes, and you'll find the podcast right there. So let's get into it. My conversation with Fabulous Freebird member Jimmy Garvin. WWE made the announcement on Monday of the newest members of the upcoming class to the Hall of Fame, and that is the Fabulous Freebirds. Joining me is one of the members of the group, that being Jimmy Garvin. Jimmy, thanks for the time, and congratulations on the announcement that you're going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Thank you for the call, and nice talking to you again.
So did you think the announcement was coming this year, especially since the Hall of Fame is in WrestleMania is going to be in Dallas?
No, I mean, really, I was quite surprised. Michael had mentioned something about it, and, you know, we didn't really, you know, talk too much about it because, you know, it was in Atlanta, too, a few years back. If any other place you've heard, like on the net and stuff, people say, well, Atlanta seems like it would be the place, but Dallas is a great place, too, of course, because you know, what we accomplished and what we did in Dallas.
What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think of Dallas, Texas?
No, the Von Erichs and the Sportatorium.
The Sportatorium, that experience and that building just have been unreal at that time. Can you put it into words on what that building was like, especially in the heyday of that feud?
Well, it was, you know, if I could use the word shrine, I think I would. Because that's kind of what it was to not only myself, but I think to a lot of people. So many entertainers played there, and it was the spot back in the day, and it even lasted through the whole building of, you know, the upcoming Dallas downtown area. You still had the Sportatorium hanging in there, even when we were there in '83, '84. You know, Dallas was a doggone large city, you know, but the Sportatorium was right around the corner. And just going into a building like that was like going into a type of museum almost.
You know, when we talk about the Fabulous Freebirds, there's so many people that have so many great memories and their impact to the wrestling business. What's your recollection of that from a standpoint of, What do you think is the everlasting impact that the Freebirds had? Because it's something that still people talk about. And I think the way that they changed the business when it came to a feud like that, and also when it came to a tag team wrestling.
Well, they, you know, excuse me. I mean, you know, Michael and them guys developed that whole three-way gang, excuse the expression. I hate to use that word, really, but the group of more than two, let's call it that, it'll be better. that concept of tag team wrestling was unheard of. And, so just to create something like that, of course, the music entrances to the ring, I think the only reference they have back is Gorgeous George back in the 50s, actually was probably the first one to ever use it. Michael and I hit it about the same time because Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin came out in Florida in around 81 with Don Henley's Dirty Laundry, and then switched over to ZZ Top, Sharp Dressed Man after that. But the Freebirds and their accomplishments, and when I talk about the Freebirds as a group, they were so versatile that was part of the magic. Michael's creativity and his thought process, which I had the pleasure of sharing many hours of production with him and creating certain situations, the little vignettes we did was before its time. You know, the valet for a day with David Von Erich and myself, we created that together. The announcer coming to my house, the other ones that we did on all the other people that worked for World Class at that time, Kamala. I remember we did one on him and coming out of the jungle type stuff. And, that had never been, that was way ahead of its time. And then it carried on even over when Michael and I did, which might possibly be seen at the WrestleMania, I'm not sure, or the induction, maybe, I'm not sure of any of this, so don't quote me. But when we did the green screen where Michael and I confronted what we accused as the two imposters. One was playing Michael and one was playing me. Have you ever seen that clip by any chance?
I have not seen that clip yet.
All right, if you get a chance, you just go to Lance Russell and the Fabulous Freebirds interviews. And there's a series of interviews, when Michael and I developed that greatest rock and roll band in the world phrase, which we took to the limit. We had took the film crew out to Hollywood and were supposedly promoting our tour around the world. We'd just come back from Germany and all this kind of stuff, and they had cameras in the limo. When we came to the hotel, there was people all around. I'm not going to give it all away, but and then Lance Russell had some undercover stuff going on where he kind of purposely and creatively under our direction exposed kind of what we were doing. And then we confronted two guys. What we did is we had the conversation with a green screen, as like they do on the Weathers, as we had Michael and I stood beside each other, confronting these other two people who really weren't there. And then we changed clothes into these European type guys that were impersonating us, and then had the conversation with ourselves, with the Fabulous Freebirds. Does that make sense? Or I just confuse you?
No, that makes sense. That's way ahead of its time then.
So I mean, you're talking long time ago, and here we are, playing around with stuff like that. So that was a lot of fun. It came somewhat natural to both of us. Michael and I worked really good together. Terry was great in the ring. His talent spoke for itself and was standalone in the sheer power and presence that he had. And Buddy was just—he was the go-to guy that if you needed something done, Buddy would do it. It wouldn't really matter. It didn't have to be It didn't have to be clean. It didn't have to be fresh. It just got, we just needed something done, but he got it done. And he was that kind of person for us, and that was his role. You know, there was nothing that he couldn't do, and he had a great psychology, and as did Terry and Michael too. It was magical to work with them, you know, because at the same time that the Freebirds were feuding with the Von Erichs, of course I had the feud as playing the gorgeous Jimmy Garvin character with David Von Erich, and then shortly after that, you know, he had his incident in Japan. And we all still miss all the boys a lot. And then it transferred over to Chris Adams. And then when you say Texas, I mean, you say Von Erichs and the Freebirds, but, does Chris Adams and gorgeous Jimmy Garvin and Sunshine and Precious ring a bell or anything? I would think so, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely, they do. And so that went on for years and years. I mean, quite honestly, that was a fantastic feud that I even enjoyed when you talk about the NWA, and we saw gorgeous Jimmy Garvin feuding with the Nature Boy Ric Flair, and it was Title versus Precious.
Yeah, exactly. And all the feud with Wahoo McDaniel in the old Jim Crockett territory of the NWA, as you say. Or the feud with what's his name? The AWA World Champ again.
You talking about Kurt Hennig or
no? No, the younger guy from Quebec, Rick Martel.
Rick Martel, yeah.
Yeah, Rick Martel, Baron Von Raschke, you know, and myself and Precious all went around. Of course, with Steve Regal came on board there for a while, and Precious and I and Steve Regal took the straps off the Road Warriors in Minneapolis. But that's a whole nother story. You know, each of us could stand alone on our own and survive a pretty large storm. And I think when you put the four of us together, there wasn't nothing that we probably couldn't do. And to be honest with you, there wasn't nothing that we didn't do.
Yeah, I'll bet. So, and that was the thing too, when we talk about the Freebirds, I mean, you know, they came together, I believe, in 79, and you're working a lot in the Southern territories and obviously on to World Class even before you got there. Had you heard about the Freebirds before you had even joined World Class? And if so, what was the reputation for them before then, before you saw them?
Oh, absolutely. Person? They weren't there much longer before Precious and I showed up. I mean, literally months, and not very many of those. Of course, Michael and I go back into the early 70s at Tommy Rich's house in Atlanta at his birthday party. That's when I first met Michael. Michael had heard of me and I had heard of him, but that was when Michael was just kind of getting started, more or less. And I'm talking 70. Oh gosh, I don't know. 74. I can't give you an exact year, but it was in the 70s when Michael was there by himself, and I was there just, you know, still trying to find my place. So Michael and I instantly became brothers as soon as we met. It was like we, you know, just knew each other all our lives and became I would say friends, but it's more than that. We're brothers. So, and that was another secret with it wasn't really a secret. It's just it was a secret. It's called a secret because it's so hard to do with a partner in any business. But when you have a wrestling industry as it is, and to have four guys like Buddy and Terry and myself and Michael so close, we were all like brothers to each other. And, you know, I had an apartment in Dallas for a couple of months across the street from where Michael and Terry and Buddy had their apartment. And I don't even think I went over there for the first couple of months. I was waiting for Patty, my wife, to come to Dallas from Florida. So I wouldn't stay over there. I just had the apartment over there kind of waiting. And then we all lived together in this apartment. and had a wonderful time. You know, played tennis at 2 o'clock in the morning, and pretty much did whatever we wanted to do. You know, without getting into full detail. I mean, it was just, you know, it was wild back then because, of course, you know, like I say, the birds were a great opponent for the Von Erichs. It was just such a natural thing. And then, of course, David and I first met down in Florida in 82, right around that time period. And he was just down there, you know, just to get out of Texas for a while. He'd come down to Florida, and I was down there working, and we traveled the roads together. He stayed at my house, and we became very good friends. And he told me, he says, well, when you get ready to leave Florida, call me, and, you know, I'll get you on up to Dallas, and we'll, you know, we'll do what we have to do up there. So David and I go way back before the actual explosion that happened in Texas with the birds and Chris Adams and myself and Stella May and Sunshine and Precious. And I think May the 3rd, 1984 was when we sold out Texas, the old Texas Stadium. So it was just, that's all we did was sell out everywhere we went anyway. You know, it was just that hot, you know?
Yeah. Well, what's your recollection of the start of that feud on Christmas 1982? And, you know, you had Kerry Von Erich against Ric Flair, the cage match, and then, you know, Michael P.S. Hayes was special guest referee, and, you know, Terry slammed the cage door on Kerry, and then, you know, the feud was built off of that. What was your recollection of the beginning of the feud and that match?
You know, I don't have, you know, that's a little bit of a gray area. There was so much going on. It was such a huge event. I think it was probably, if I stand corrected, if I'm wrong, but the second largest live audience at the time, other than Shea Stadium, with Bruno Sammartino and Larry Zbyszko. I think they held the record for the largest live audience. And I think Texas Stadium at that time when we were doing that was the second. And I'm pretty sure I'm right. That was a you know, pretty wild day, you know. And again, we came in on a helicopter. So, you know, back when we're talking, you know, 83, nobody was coming in on helicopters, you know. So I don't really. There's certain gray areas that I don't quite have as good a memory on. In certain time periods for many reasons.
Well, did you think it was I mean, it seemed so obvious, like, the second that it began, because you had the Freebirds were the group, the Von Erichs were a group, and it just seemed like it was destined to possibly happen, the way that it started, and then the way that it continued was just magical. Was there any surprise that it would work as well as it did?
No, that wasn't. That was one of those things that, if you can wrap your head around it for a minute and think this way, that was one of those things that were meant to be. That was going to happen. That was just, it wasn't, you know, if it was going to happen, it was when it was going to happen. It was bound to happen. that mixture was just. It was evolutionary, you know, and it couldn't fail. You know, it'd be like having a big fire and not having nothing to put it out with. It was one of those fires that you can't put out with water.
Yeah.
You know. Well, what do you mean we can't put it out? It's a fire. We're going to pour water on it. Well, it ain't going to go out. In fact, it's actually going to get larger, you know, and one of those type of phenomenons. And then, you know, you had Kenny Mantell and Michael Hayes and myself and all of us, you know, brainstorming. And we had a lot of talent to work with. You know, we had a lot of, there wasn't nothing that we could ask where we would be worried if the talent could pull it off or not, I guess is what I'm saying. In other words, if we asked somebody, King Parsons, or if we asked any one of the other great guys that were there at the time, heavily involved in this, that all we had to do is say, this is what we want to do. This is how it should be. And then, in other words, this is the way we want the picture drawn. And then that's the way it was drawn because we had the talent. When I say we, as a unit, as a territory, the talent in that territory at that time. And plus, it was phenomenal. But I mean, to be honest with you, you could have went to any city and put the Freebirds against the Von Erichs, and that would be the only match, and it would have sold out. I might be a little overstating myself when it comes to maybe big San Antonio Coliseums or you know places like that that held thousands of, reunion arena. I don't think the people would pay to see one match, but I bet it'd come close. Or Chris Adams and myself with the Sunshine and Precious feud. I think if you had put that one match on the card, and I think you'd have drawn a heck of a house with that in itself. But then when you have both of those on the card and you have good underneath support, holy smokes, that's like a magical kingdom, you know?
Absolutely. And that was the thing when you talk about that whole territory, the amount of talent there was just amazing. And I know you'd said that you had been tight with Michael for years before you guys actually worked together in World Class. But how did it come about that you became an honorary Freebird?
Well, you know, I was always, from the time that the Freebirds came together, of course, I was in another territory, but Michael and I always stayed close, and our thoughts and beliefs of the business and the way we thought and was so alike that, you know, I was born a Freebird, and Michael was too, and so was Terry, and so was obviously Buddy. We just happened to finally get together. It's one of those things too, that it was just a matter of time before that happened. But, I was always, a lot of times years before they referred to me as the undercover bird, the undercover Freebird, before I was an official Freebird, when I was doing the gorgeous Jimmy Garvin, character. Of course, when I was doing the gorgeous Jimmy Garvin character and the Freebirds were doing their stuff in Dallas, I was a Freebird then. It just I was busy doing gorgeous Jimmy Garvin.
Right.
But who was I really? Was I gorgeous Jimmy Garvin or was I a Freebird? Well, I was a Freebird, but I had this character that I knew that would do well, that, you know, handled properly. And which he did, so I've always been a Freebird. I mean, I was born September 25th, 1952, a Freebird, and Michael and Buddy and Terry, because I mean that's just, you know, that's we were all too alike, too much alike to not be meant to be together. You know, we had a bad, you know, for a while, a bad streak, and I love Brad too. It was a great guy and a great worker and very, very funny and entertaining and a great man. And we had Rocky King. I mean, we had certain characters that we'd throw in there. It's like spices, you know, when you're cooking a meal. But it wasn't the meal,
right?
You know. Then it got, you know, that was a different time. That was, you know, that was when, you know, that wasn't a real pleasant time to be around, you know, that operation, or, you know, being a Freebird at the time, you know, was a dangerous occupation as well, because, you know, there was a lot of things going on that.
Well, I was going to ask you too, because in the heyday of that feud, and we saw how heated it was between the Von Erichs and the Freebirds, especially when you're talking about in Texas, how nasty of a scene did it ever get? It shows. Like, how often did you get attacked?
Oh my gosh, that was that. I mean, I remember Laredo, Texas, and all I got to do is say Laredo, Texas, and there you okay. So now you know what's going to happen there, right? It's total chaos. And for the sake of the people that are in Laredo and can hear this or will hear this. I love Laredo, so don't come do a drive by my house or anything.
You're allowed to go back in city limits now, I think.
Yeah. So. We had him try to carry Precious out the back of the building, and the boys actually had to come out of the dressing room and fight to get her away from the crowd. I couldn't do it by myself. The crowd had her up over their heads, taking her out. Literally, the Kiel Auditorium. I think that's what it's called in St. Louis, either that or in Kansas City, one of the two places. I was in a match with Chris Adams, sold out, and just heard the loudest smack I ever heard in my life and turned around and looked, and there was no Precious to be seen. And I thought, oh gosh, you know, so I looked around, you know, took a minute, you know, looked around. When I say I took a minute, I mean, I nailed Chris and he went down. And I took a minute and checked all the sides, and she's in the heck of a fight with a lady truck driver out on the floor that had jumped the rail and blindsided her. And that ended up going to court. Luckily not hurting Patty too much, which was good. A lot of fighting back then. I mean, there was a lot of fighting back then, and fighting to get back into the dressing rooms, or fighting guys that just wanted to hit the ring to vent their frustration on us. I think there's a small clip in there somewhere I saw on the internet where you see Terry Gordy pushing this guy down. Because that's what we had to do. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but he pretty much took him off his, lifted him up in the air with a shove. But it was violent. It was violent, very violent. That was back in the day. I mean, if you were beating up a Von Erich in Texas, you were taking your life into your own hands.
You know, as dangerous and as violent as that was, and you're always trying to get heat, did you enjoy having that much heat?
It had its moments, you know. It goes with the territory. That's I guess one of the best ways to look at something like that. You know, when you have a situation, you know, you're a fireman and the building's on fire. Well, you know, but this is a big fire. But yet but I'm a fireman. That's what I do. I put out fires. You know, and if I don't put out the fire, who's going to put it out? So, you know, we were wrestlers. We were fighters. We knew what we were doing. We knew that what we were going to do was going to cause a pretty big fire. And we were prepared to the best that we could be for, you know, the eventual outcome, which most of the time was a violent one. So, I mean, that just went with it. I mean, that was our mindset. Maybe that's where the Jack Daniels came in. I don't know.
And there was plenty of that flowing, wasn't there?
Of course, yes.
You know, you talk about fighting with the crowds, but when we talk about these matches, you know, especially in World Class, and we talk about that feud, you know, those were some pretty stiff matches. I mean, what was it like going through that type of a match on a night-to-night basis, too?
Like being in a shoot every night, you know? Are you familiar with that expression?
Yep.
Yeah, of course. But the same thing. You know, Kerry and... Kerry he wasn't too bad. Kevin would kill you if you give him half a chance, you know, with some of his wild punches. And David, of course, was pretty good. But everything was really tight because that's just the way we liked it. You know, that's the way we liked it. And that's probably another reason why it turned out to be as spectacular as it did, is because, you know, if you were going to hit me with a chair, and I didn't have to tell you this, you already knew it, you better hit me with the chair, you know. So if you're going to hit me with the punch, you better hit me with the punch. You know, don't be playing around. because we're not here to play, you know. So let's take this as close as we can and try not to break nobody's nose or knock any teeth out or break anybody's arm or break anybody's leg. We're not going to try to injure each other. But when we locked up with one another, I can think of many, 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 many times that it was like it was just like locking up with, a rhinoceros or something.
So that 3-4-5 year period, would you say that was the best period of your career, your favorite period of it?
Well, that would be one of them. Yeah, I had a pretty good run down in Florida with. I wrestled Harley Race in the old Al Lopez Field baseball stadium for the world title and went an hour Broadway with him. Wrestled with the Briscoes down in Florida. I had J.J. Dillon as a manager, and I had Buddy Rogers, the legendary Buddy Rogers, as a manager at one time. I had Killer Carl Cox as a manager at one time. I mean, that's pretty heavy. That's heavy company to be with, and we had some good feuds down there. So that was good times for me. AWA was good times for me. With Rick Martel. Him and I used to have magical matches, kind of like it reminded me of the matches that David and I would have because we just blended so well together and we just worked so well together. In Crockett's territory, with Wahoo McDaniel, I never felt I really had a great match with Flair. I just never did. I really never felt that I had anything to be proud of or working with Rick, it just didn't mesh that good. I don't know why. It just didn't mesh. It was okay, but it was because of Patty and all that going on. I'm not sure if the chemistry wasn't there. So to answer your question, I had a lot of, Florida and Texas was great. Now, Texas was pretty big, but NWA with Crockett was pretty good too. But yeah, Texas was pretty massive. I mean, I guess that would be the number one, but I did have some, good number twos, number threes, number fours situations, where, I was being able to entertain and express my art to many people.
How long did it take for you to feel pretty safe about going back in the state of Texas?
Oh, yeah, good question. I don't know. Texas is. Texas is their own country. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was threatened in Texas when I was working, at the actual arenas, we didn't really go out a lot. We were really restricted on, there was not a lot of going out to dinner or going out to eat in certain places because, it wouldn't be safe to do that. There's a possibility that, you might get poisoned or worse. So we did a lot. We did most of our socializing at the apartment that we lived at. But going back into Texas, I never felt bad after. After that, too bad. Didn't get to go back there very much.
Yeah. Did anybody ever try to stab you or shoot you? I mean, how bad did it get?
In Australia, I was stabbed twice over my left kidney in a riot. In Wichita Falls, Texas, a fan came in and told the policeman that there was a guy hiding up in one of the barns out behind. It was at the fairgrounds, and there was a horse barn up behind the exit where we would go out after it was all over and where we would come in when we first got there. But during the matches, they came and told the policeman that there was a guy hiding up in the barn with a rifle that was going to shoot me. And they went up there. They told me to stay where I was at, and they went up there and got him. So, you know, that was good.
That's very good. That's pretty serious. That's called being a heat magnet there, Jimmy.
Yeah, then, you know, Ray Stevens and I, that's another one, you know, that him and I were, you know, just, you know, I managed him doing the Bo James character down in Florida, working with Ray Stevens. They shot at us on coming back from West Palm Beach and on the highway one time. You know, when you think about the names, you know, that I've just mentioned, you know, like Ray Stevens and Buddy Rogers and the Briscoes, you know, Jack Briscoes, I loved him to death, and Jerry as well. And, you know, Lou Fez and Danny Hodge. I mean, do you think people today know those names, or do you think they don't?
Oh, they know. They know. And it's amazing that, like, the names that you were associated with and got to work with or around, considering you were a guy when you first started out, you were a manager.
Exactly. Yeah, that's how I broke in as a manager. Yeah, for Ernie Mohammed, a promoter in Arizona. But I think I'm the only guy I can say I think, and you know, the people that listen, they could look it up and find out again. I could be wrong, you know, but I think I'm the only guy living now that wrestled. I wrestled Lou Fez. I wrestled Pat O'Connor, Danny Hodge, Buddy Rogers. I can't think of any other names off the top of my head, but those that's a pretty good handful of guys right there, of legendary people. You know,
absolutely.
Just to be in the ring with Pat O'Connor, to have a match with Lou Fez, to have a match, many matches with Danny Hodge, Jack Briscoe, and Harley Race, Wahoo McDaniel. Holy smokes, you know.
That's a heck of a list right there.
You know, but I broke in November 1st, 1969, you know. So I had that part, you know. There was I got around a little bit and found my ground. Of course, you know, then I started flying too. I was 17 when I turned pro. I started as an amateur when I was 9 at 106 North Albany down in Tampa, Florida. That was the sportatorium in Tampa. It was the Tampa Sportatorium on 106 North Albany. That was where the office was for Eddie Graham and Gordon Solie and all them boys did the TV tapings. I had my first interview with Gordon Solie when I was 9 years old as an amateur. Eddie Graham had a special little school for, you know, young kids, and I was one of them, and we used to, you know, do the AAU, the amateur circuit around competing around the state of Florida. So, you know, Joe Scarpa, the Chief J. Strongbow, my parents had a small apartment complex, and that's how I got involved in it. He came out one morning and said, "Hey, kid, what are you doing?" It was like a Saturday morning. I said, "Oh, nothing, just messing around." He says, "Oh, you want to go down to the wrestling matches?" I said, "Sure." I was 9 years old. You know, I had Boris Malenko live there. John Studd lived there. Bruiser Brody lived there. Carl Gotch helped train me down there. Don Curtis out of Jacksonville. Joe Scarpa worked with me as an amateur. So when I turned pro when I was 17, I had been around for a while.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when I started flying when I was 19. Just Sam Maneker, an old promoter, took me in his airplane to a town, and I just fell in love with aviation. So I said, "Well, when I turn 40, I'm going to retire and fly airplanes and play golf." You know, I said that when I was about 26. And then I retired on my 40th birthday with Turner in 1992. And then shortly right after that, did a real quick trip over to Africa with Chris and Chris Adams and Kevin and Tommy Rogers and Jimmy Snuka, Mike Sharp. the Iron Sheik. I mean, what a group, right?
We went
to Africa for 21 days, and then after that, you know, I started, you know, flight instructor, and then I, you know, flew for after that for a U.S. Air Express carrier, and then Midway Airlines, and then, you know, now I've been a captain for NetJets now for 15 years.
How often did people notice you when you first started flying commercial or being pilot commercial flights?
None.
Really?
Nobody. No, nobody would notice me. Nobody knew. In fact, I had Matt Hardy and what was his brother's name?
Jeff.
Or the other, his partner?
Yeah, Jeff.
Jeff. They were on a Midway flight of mine. And the flight attendant came up and said, you're not going to believe who's in the back. And I said, who? And they told me. So I went to the back before we were pushing back from the gate. And I leaned over to them. They seen me coming down the aisle looking at them, so they knew something was up, but they didn't know what. And I leaned over and I told them, I says, you guys got about 5 seconds to get off my airplane. And, of course, they didn't know what to say. You know, I mean, the look on their faces, I can't describe to you what that'd be like. And then I told them who I was, and they just, you know, died laughing and couldn't stand it. You know, it was a pretty good rib, though, I told them.
Yeah, that's pretty good right there.
Yeah. You know, when the pilot comes back and tells you that, you know, you got about 5 seconds to get off the airplane, that, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty serious.
That's not a good sign.
Probably not. But, last couple of things, you know, we talked about that period with the Freebirds, and then you and Michael teamed up together in WCW around 89, I guess it was. Did you ever think the team was going to be put back together, or what were your thoughts about that happening?
You know, when Michael and I teamed up for WCW?
Yeah.
I was already, you know, like I told you, I was going to retire when I turned 40. So I knew I had, it was about 5 years. It was from about 88, latter part of 88, maybe 89, close enough, to 92 when I retired. So I was leaving anyway. So I was gonna ride it out with Michael and I being the Birds to the end, you know. But that, as far as going any further than that, no, because I was gonna quit anyway.
Yeah,
I already had a plan, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, what do you think the scene's gonna be like in Dallas for the Hall of Fame ceremony when you and Michael are up there on the stage and giving your induction speeches?
I cannot tell you. Ever since, you know, I found this out officially, just like everybody else, you know, the other night, I may have found out a little bit earlier, kind of, but not officially, which, you know, still, it was on my mind. I knew a little bit there was talk going around. And ever since then, it's every night I go to sleep thinking, what's that going to be like? You know, what's that going to be like? I think it's going to be pretty funny. I think it's going to be entertaining. You know, Michael's funny anyway. And him and I together, I have no idea. I have no idea. I'm going to hope that we don't get arrested or thrown off a stage. Or, you know, the big hook that comes out or something like that and grabs you by the neck, you know, or you hear the proverbial music start to play, right? That'd probably be the end of it right there. We'd probably lose it. And for sure, it's hard to say because, you know, it's just that chemistry that Michael and I, you know, of course, you know, Buddy's son's going to be there, Ray. And at least that's what I understand. And also Brandon, Buddy's son Brandon and Terry's son Ray, had it backwards. I think they're going to be there to say a couple of words, you know, about their dads and stuff. I don't know what the format and timing and everything is going to be. But as far as Michael and I, we have a few stories we're probably going to tell. I think we're in the process of putting together some pretty good videos to show, and I don't know, I was talking about this to Michael the other day, and I started adding it up, and it's like 33 years ago, bro.
Yeah, it is.
33 years ago. I mean, and I was looking on the internet today when I was looking through, and they got somebody wrote, man, how time flies. Jimmy Garvin is 63. Yeah. Actually, I'm 63 and a half, but, you know, 33 years ago, we're talking about something that happened over a quarter of a century.
But I think that shows the impact that it had and how much it stands the test of time, is that people still talk about that.
I don't think it's ever going to go away. And you know what kills me? And this is, it's kind of funny, and this, and because it has to be funny. And because, I don't have the long flowing hair that I used to have, you know, I'm 33 years older. And years ago, I used to go do the autograph things every once in a while. I don't do this no more. You know, nothing offensive against the fans. I just prefer not to do it. But they go, man, you just don't look the same. And I go, bro, but look at a picture of yourself, 25 years ago, and then go look in the mirror and tell me if you look the same. I mean, right. People don't get that part. You know, isn't that funny? They don't get that. They come to expect to see the character, but how does that happen? I mean, how can you even think that?
Yeah, it's. You know what? Guess what? We all age. You know, we all.
You know, that's right. We're all going to pay our taxes, and we're all going to, pass on to a better place. But it was always just kind of a funny little thing that I used to hear. They would be in line waiting for an autograph or something, and you go, "Dad, you don't look the same." Well, hell no, I don't look the same. Crap, I'm lucky to be alive.
Well, you know what? You might not have the long flowing hair that you once had, but. Could you break out a pair of the colorful suspenders?
You know what, man? I'm going to tell you the truth. I got my original gold gorgeous Jimmy Garvin jacket in the storage. I got. I sent some stuff to New York for their Legends display they're going to have out in Dallas. A couple of leather jacket and some boots and stuff. When I retired, I threw almost everything I had away. I do have the Rebel flag cape. I did keep, I kept that, and I kept a pair of boots. I got a couple of pair of tights, but most of my stuff I filled two large trash cans up. To end the story.
Wow. So
it's kind of amazing. When I did retire, I cut my hair and, went to Lowe's and looked at hammers,
And that was that. You just closed the door. You moved from one part of your life to another, and it sounds like it wasn't that difficult of a transition for you.
But no, it took me a little while, but it wasn't that bad because I had planned for it for so long.
Yeah.
That planning is everything. And to be honest with you, the wrestling was a big part of my life. But I'm an aviator. I fly, and that's what I love to do. That's why I do it now, is because I enjoy it, not because I have to do it. It's such a pleasure.
Last thing, I know that Michael can be very flamboyant with the outfits that he wears at the Hall of Fame. Any chance that you could be matching? Because, he's infamous for wearing like this lime green suit with the top hat or bright red or canary yellow.
Yeah, he never was one for style at all, actually. You can cut that out, maybe. Or you can leave it in because I don't really care. It's not my fault that he dresses that way.
He's still got the fanny pack going.
Michael's Michael, and no, I'm not going to match him. I got a Vera Wang tuxedo, and now maybe at the dinners, I think there's little parties before or after, more of my personal style will come out, but my personal style is is not quite like Michael's.
Nobody's is quite like Michael's.
No, well, I don't know if anybody could get away with it except him.
I don't think so either. So,
because even myself, you know, I mean, and Patty says, well, I wonder what Michael's going to wear. Oh, well, I don't know. You know,
it's unpredictable.
It's going to be interesting, and he's a great, you know, I love him like a brother. So we're not talking about him. We're just, I would say the same thing if he was standing right here. And if he, you know, if he hears this, then that's good too. But he, you know, he'll hear shit from me anyway. Excuse me for swearing, but he'll hear that stuff from me. You know, we pull each other's chains. If it provided entertainment for us, we'll do it to entertain each other and make each other laugh. Or he's a good man, and I love him a lot. And Buddy and Terry are sadly missed, and you know, we love them a lot too. So that will be expressed as well there. So you know, it's going to be interesting because it's timing is everything. So
mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, it's good. I think it's going to be a great night in Dallas. I really do. And I'm glad to see the Freebirds going in. I'm glad to see that you are going in. I think it's going to be a fantastic night, like I said. And congratulations again. And I'm looking forward to seeing it come WrestleMania weekend.
Yes. Well, holler at me. Give me a holler. I'll be standing to the guy next to them, the canary yellow top hat and long coat.
Great catching up with Jimmy Garvin, gorgeous Jimmy Garvin, one of the members of the fabulous Freebirds. And I think it's going to be a great night seeing him and Michael Hayes go on that stage in Dallas the night before WrestleMania and be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. Nothing against anybody else that's going in. And we already know Sting is going in and the Godfather is going in, and nothing against anybody else. But I think the Freebirds are going to make that night with so many people waiting so long for them to finally go into the Hall of Fame and for it to happen in Dallas, Texas. That is a big deal. And I think it's going to be a special night for everybody in attendance, everybody watching, and especially for Michael P.S. Hayes and for Jimmy Garvin. That stage, that place in Dallas, Texas, that's going to be a great, great night, I think. Make sure you subscribe to the Between the Ropes podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, rate and review the podcast. And you can also find it on SoundCloud. Just go to soundcloud.com/Between the Ropes, or you can go to BetweenTheRopes.com. You can find everything there. I'll be back later on in the week with another podcast talking about all the latest news and notes and Raw, everything going on in pro wrestling. Talk to you then.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.